A lot of people think of southern cities when it comes to housing segregation, families being met with violence. But today, more than 50 years later, many American towns and cities remain mostly segregated by race. That's because there's a whole system that reinforces segregation. Tanya English has more.
Housing segregation didn't just happen by chance. As early as the 1800s, local laws blocked off entire neighborhoods that became off-limits to black families. Later, when it became illegal for city governments to use race-based zoning, that's when individual homeowners brokered private contracts with prospective homebuyers to keep the neighborhood white. A typical land contract sounded something like this.
Hereafter, no part of said property or any portion thereof shall be occupied by any person not of the Caucasian race.
Restrictive covenants were extremely common. One magazine article from the 1940s suggested that in Los Angeles and Chicago, for example, 80% of property was reserved for white people only. Neighborhood improvement associations worked to keep it that way, but there were also federal programs propped up by racist ideas that drove segregation in cities.
Part of this has to do with very kind of arcane and somewhat absurd notions coming out of sociology in the early part of the 20th century that basically said that the way that you create so-called stable communities is by making sure that they're racially homogenous.
Historian Nathan Connolly teaches at Johns Hopkins University.
There was a sense that racial violence that occurred in cities like Chicago in 1919 or in other parts of the country in the wake of the Great Migration seemed to prove that the only way to really make sure that communities could be stable was if, in fact, they were racially segregated.
This folk knowledge, as Nathan calls it, became federal policy. In the 30s, the U.S. government started guaranteeing mortgages. And in the process, officials drew up maps that marked black neighborhoods as a bad investment. And the government didn't back loans in those communities. That so-called redlining made it harder for black people to buy a home, which is one of the fundamental ways that Americans build wealth.
Do you know how far your pay will go in buying a house? It may surprise you to learn that you can become a homeowner even on a small salary with a National Housing Act insured mortgage.
While many white families had the privilege of subsidized housing and federally backed mortgages, black families were forced into neighborhoods with crumbling infrastructure and old, often unhealthy housing stock. In 1968, the Fair Housing Act banned racial discrimination when people go to rent a place, buy a home, or look for financing. But Nathan says by then, the housing industry had internalized the idea that property values are inextricably tied to race.
The entire industry was taking these federal segregation guidelines as basically the gold standard. There was a foundational common sense that remained in place that if you have too much mixing and too many people of color concentrated, that ends up being a bad business model for some people and a really profitable, somewhat predatory business model for other people.
Individuals also internalized that thinking.
Once a neighborhood moves to about 30% black, the people in that neighborhood who aren't black perceive that their neighborhood is going downhill. They perceive that their property values will be diminished. And so they begin the process of trying to rapidly sell off their homes and see if they can leave the community with as much of their initial investment as possible.
Nathan says white flight, the hurried divestment from a neighborhood, left parts of cities destabilized and under-resourced. Today, the forces that drive housing segregation are more subtle. When a real estate agent steers all of her black clients to one neighborhood, that's illegal. But Nathan says it happens, and he and his wife felt that push in 2010 when they were shopping for a home in Baltimore.
We were being directed to neighborhoods that were absolutely deplorable. Most African Americans who, say, make $100,000 a year live in the same quality neighborhood in terms of schools, in terms of availability of fresh food and so forth, as whites who make $30,000 a year.
That's Nathan Connolly. He's one of the hosts of the podcast Backstory. He is a historian at Johns Hopkins University. Tanya English brought us this story.